Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. I am Bob Enyart, the pastor of Denver Bible Church. Coming soon, we will have an interview with one of the leaders of the intelligent design movement. That is the movement that rejects Darwinism, neo-Darwinism, that all life on Earth evolved through mutations and natural selection to lead to giraffes and human beings and all. But some in the intelligent design movement are effectively agnostic, and they don't claim that the God of the Bible or a personal God created us. They're only going so far as to say that the laws of physics and the laws of nature do not enable Darwinism, evolution, to occur. So it's an interesting movement, and just as I will quote from Albert Einstein when it seems that he has something relevant to say to one of our discussions, so too I'm happy to quote from the intelligent design movement regarding their research and their findings. So I'm looking forward to that. Also, Alan Keyes, who spoke at Colorado Right to Life's banquet, we are planning to air the full text of Alan Keyes' speech on this program. And when do we think we're going to do that? On Monday. So that should be a really interesting show. I mean, it should be the best show of the year. It's Alan Keyes. And then on Friday, Real Science Friday coming right up. Can't wait for that. And on Wednesday and Thursday, so over the next 2 days, we plan to air a conversation I've had with a pagan from Illinois. And I got to tell you, it didn't start out on a very good footing. It started out rather difficult. You know, you have these difficult conversations. It started out on a difficult footing and it just went downhill from there. No, actually, I think it became relevant and fruitful in the conversation to analyze the different worldviews. Paganism, do the trees and the clouds take our prayers and amplify them, as some pagans might believe? And what do they amplify them to the earth, Mother Earth, the earth goddess? But so that conversation, I think you might enjoy. I know I enjoyed it. And then Friday, Real Science Friday, Monday, Alan Keyes. So there's a lot going on. If you're in the Denver metropolitan area on Sunday at Denver Bible Church, Gordon Carroll will be preaching the sermon. He is an elder at Denver Bible Church, and I will be in Ohio. I'll have the honor of preaching at a fellowship in Ohio on Sunday. And I'm going there for an internet project, a very important project. We just had our telethon, and we're up to how much now? $11,200. $11,200. So 56% of our goal, which was so great. Thank you for all of you who gave. In fact, somebody from Iowa called in and said, I want to raise Iowa in the rankings. So he donated more, so Iowa went up 5 spots, because 20 states have donated to keep Bob Enyart live on the internet for another year, and Iowa was down around 15 or so. No, not at 15. What were they? They were about 12. Now they're about number 8. So thank you, Iowa, for boosting your rankings. So there's a lot going on here at Bob Enyart Live, and I'll tell you more about our internet project when I return. We'll see how that goes. If you're interested in pro-life profiles, there was just published this week a profile of the Mormon Church, of all things. the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Now, that name itself has been co-opted by pro-life activists who go to abortion clinics to protest, and the abortion clinics build these high fences around. They look like concentration camps. And so the pro-lifers bring ladders, and they set up the ladders, and they climb up the ladders to speak to the women, to plead with them not to kill their babies. So some people have taken to calling them Latter-day Saints, but tongue-in-cheek, of course. But it turns out that the Mormon Church, on its official website, Mormon.org, they say that they're pro-life and that God commanded, do not murder, and the child is made in God's image and likeness. So then they say, so don't have an elective abortion, but you can kill the baby if his father's a criminal or if the baby's severely handicapped. And we think, what in the world? What does God say? Obey me, except don't kill an innocent child unless his father's a criminal, then you could kill him. Don't kill an innocent child unless he's severely handicapped, then you could kill him. What in the world are they doing over there in Salt Lake? What are they doing? I mean, this is just such a blatant violation of the principles of justice that God has revealed in his word. What, when things are difficult, then you could kill a baby? When things are emotionally hard, then you could kill your baby? God says you don't kill a child for the crime of his father. You don't punish a child for the sin of his father. I mean, it's explicit. So regardless of the circumstances of the child's conception, you don't kill the child. God says that child is in my image and my likeness, and you're to love and protect the child, not give excuses to how and when it's okay to kill the baby. So at pro-life profiles, there are four tiers of pro-lifers. Tier 1 through 4, pro-life now, pro-life whenever. I'm saying pro-life, it's the same as personhood. But personhood now, personhood whenever, personhood later, and personhood never. And never is tier 4. And so if the Mormon Church continues to maintain that you can kill the baby if his father's a criminal or if the baby is handicapped, well, then they believe in personhood never. They reject that the baby has a God-given right to life. And so people in the Mormon Church should question the wisdom of their leaders to so bluntly and openly acknowledge that they don't believe that the God-given right to life for a child, of all people, for a child is sacrosanct. They don't believe that. So there are elective times when you could murder a child. So don't kill the child if it's an elective. Like, otherwise, it's necessary. Like, if the father of the child is a criminal, then it's not elective. It's necessary. You've got to kill the baby. Well, no, they say you don't have to kill the baby, but if you do, it's okay. Because what? That's what God says. God says if the baby's father is a criminal, then it's okay if you kill him. And at what age? At what age? Because when he's in the womb or when he's being born or after he's born, he's still the same child made in God's image and likeness. So maybe the baby's 4 months old and the mother thinks, you know, your father was a no good criminal and I'm not going to put up with this and I'm going to kill him because, well, you know, there's an exception. This is not an elective infanticide. This is a requirement. Pro-Life Profiles offers a $100 reward for anyone who could correct a significant error on that site. And so the same would hold true with the Mormon Church and their position on abortion. And it would be hard to say that they're wrong because they embed images of the Mormon, official Mormon website, and where they say abortion is murder and all, except if the father's a criminal or the baby is severely handicapped and so on. Okay, So you might want to check that out over at prolifeprofiles.com. Now, you are familiar with the Fast and Furious scandal where the U.S. Justice Department knowingly provided criminal gangs in Mexico, no less, with guns. It's like a research project. Well, if we give these guns to criminals, let's see what they do with them, and we could try to track them. So now it turns out that not only did the Justice Department do this knowingly, their Fast and Furious program turned scandal, but the Attorney General, the U.S. Attorney General, who reports to Barack Obama, Eric Holder, lied to Congress about having knowledge of the Fast and Furious program. What did he know and when did he know it? That whole thing. What did he know and when did he know it? And so a CBS News journalist, Cheryl Atkinson, says that she was trying to interview the Justice Department and the White House, and she said that she was yelled at and she was screamed at. And she was on with Laura Ingraham and said, and Laura asked, were they literally screaming at you? And she said, yes. This is the CBS reporter. Yes. Well, the Department of Justice woman was yelling at me, and the guy from the White House on Friday night literally screamed at me and cussed at me. And that was Eric Schultz from the White House. How's that? And Tracy Schmaller from the Department of Justice was yelling. So it's quite a trip. When there is no foundation of right and wrong that a government bureaucracy is operating on, well, then creativity knows no bounds. And if you are intellectually curious about what's going to happen if we give thousands of guns to Mexican criminal gangs, well, then you might just go ahead and do it. Because there's no fundamental basis of right and wrong by which you can check your own motives. And so that's what's going on. Speaking of lacking a foundation of right and wrong, you know, our criminal justice system, if you're called for jury duty, they want to know if you might have a conflict of interest. Like if your second cousin ever ran into one of the 47 people who are going to testify in court, then maybe you have a conflict of interest. They have to explore it. Well, how about the conflict of interest wherein if you are found guilty of a serious crime or a minor infraction, then you have to give money to the criminal justice system. You're fined. You give money to the court. And in a lot of ways, fines go to fund the very departments where the bureaucrats are paid out of the department budget. Like all over this country where police departments are told that when you write a ticket, the money doesn't go to the police department. It goes into the general fund of the city or the county or the state, whatever. And then what the bureaucrats realized was that not all that many tickets are being written and there's not a lot of revenue being generated. So they change the rules and they say, okay, the funds from traffic tickets will go to your department. So then you have a complete 180 of direction to officers, whereas a police chief will say on one day, I don't want you wasting time writing tickets. And they change the accounting procedure. So then the funds brought in from the ticket fines go to the police department. And then the very next day, he says to the same officers, you better be writing tickets. I want to see a minimum of 3 tickets per day per officer. And if you're not doing it, I'm going to find out about it. So then the public, of course, becomes suspicious of the entire process of writing tickets. And that's unavoidable. And a legal system, a criminal justice system, shouldn't undermine, it should not systematically undermine the trust of the public in the integrity of the system itself. Shouldn't do that. So earlier today, one of our staffers here at Bob and Yurt Live was just merrily on his way through town and was on a secondary street, a surface street. And it was two lanes each direction, and he wasn't speeding, but he ended up getting a $173 ticket. And it brings up an interesting question regarding right and wrong in our criminal justice system. And he got the ticket because an officer was on the shoulder giving a ticket to someone else, and he's on this surface street, two lanes in both directions, and did not pull over into the left lane. And I understand that when there's an officer off on the right hand of the street, you're going to want to often pull over into the left lane. Of course, sometimes there's somebody in the left lane, so you can't pull over. You're not going to want to stop because that's more inclined to cause an accident. And the slower you're going, the less likely you are to just think that I need to pull over. If you're on the highway and you're going 75 miles an hour and there's a truck pulled over and you think, well, I'm going to pull over in the left lane because if that guy walked out and I'm going 75 miles an hour, you know, it's not good. But when you're going slower, you might not think about it. And so our staffer got a ticket today, a $173 ticket, because he didn't pull over into the left lane. And what's interesting to me is that while he was there, he said to the officer, you know, since you've been giving me this ticket, at least 50 cars have passed in the right lane with no one in the left lane. So people, they don't know that this is a law, especially when you're going slower like this. The speed limit here on this road, they don't know this is a law. And what's interesting to me is that when the police department or the sheriff's department sees this as a revenue opportunity, then systematically the public tends to disrespect the entire ticketing process. They don't even respect it. And while it's a real danger, a police officer on the side of the road giving a ticket definitely increases the risk of his safety and life and limb, the police departments are using that dangerous situation to increase their revenue. And so now they found another way to increase the revenue. If you don't pull over, then it's another $173. So it feeds on itself. So if we really were concerned about conflict of interest, we'd get rid of the entire system of fines, which cause people to doubt the integrity of the criminal justice system itself. Even when people are convicted, there are millions of people who think, well, you got convicted because the system wants money. The system is hungry for money. Let's go to the phones. In Colorado, our number, 1-800-8-NYARTS, 1-800-836-9278, about the death penalty in Amanda Knox from yesterday's discussion in Longmont. Scott, welcome to Bob and Yurt Live.
Hi, Bob.
Howdy, sir.
Yeah, I wanted to thank you for that show yesterday about the death penalty where so many people argue that it is not a deterrent.
Yeah.
Well, if there were a death penalty in 1975, I would not have been an accessory to murder of a preborn child.
Oh, Scott.
Because that's accessory as well, and that could have been, I could have been prosecuted for that too. So.
Wow. Hey, Scott, I was friends with a man who went to prison because he helped to arrange an abortion.
Oh.
And his last name was Zach.
Mm-hmm.
And he's now gone on to be with the Lord. And he, while he was in prison, He had a change of heart. He became a Christian. He became strongly pro-life. But before Roe v. Wade, he had helped to arrange for an unborn child to be killed. And in California, he went to prison for it.
So just a little over two years before that, if this would have happened in my circumstance, I would have never done what I did.
Mm. Wow.
Based on that. And so not only does murder, the death penalty affect, you know, people who murder people who are born, but also it would affect those who are preborn as well. So
wow.
It's far-reaching that the death penalty is.
Well, Scott, thank you very, very much for sharing that. I'm sure, and you know what? I just lost Scott, but that's okay. Thank you, Scott, for calling in and for sharing that personal testimony from your past, and I'm sure one that is very difficult. A lot of people are in denial. They kill their own child, and they tell themselves that there's nothing wrong with that. And what a great tragedy that is. Okay, so we have the federal government giving thousands of guns to gangs, criminal gangs in Mexico. We have throughout this country, local law enforcement fining people for violations that the general public often doubts the integrity of the system, because when you're found guilty or you plead no contest, then you end up writing a check to the very system that accused you. And so that is an inherent conflict of interest. And what do you think when our judges in court make such a show of being so concerned with a conflict of interest? You think any of them, you think the state legislators, you think the county commissioners are really going to care to take a second look at our whole system of fining criminals and fining people who are not criminals, but it's just easier to pay the money than to stand up for what you believe is the truth in the matter and that you've been wrongly accused? Now, I doubt that they're going to look at that. But now, personhood, you know, personhood is a dagger in the heart of liberalism. It is the most effective thing we can do to make the most significant long-term change to our culture and our government. Because when a culture says that we can indiscriminately kill innocent children, and the government is going to defend you in doing that, and the culture is going to approve of you doing that, then, of course, do not steal. What are the chances that do not steal is going to get a fair shake? Or how about do not commit adultery? And how about don't commit perjury? Do not bear false witness against your neighbor? None of those can even hold a candle to do not murder. And so the country that openly advocates the killing of its most innocent, children, that country erodes its very moral foundation. And that's what we see happening here in this country. Hey, we have Herman Cain, who's doing really well now against Rick Perry. So that's the big news today. Rick Perry is slipping, and Herman Cain is rising in his bid for the Republican nomination for president. And one of the things, one of the dynamics going on here is that the most unknown Republican candidate becomes the least objectionable. And so people don't know much about, say, Mitt Romney, and so he's so popular. And then Republican, conservative, pro-lifers start finding out about Mitt Romney, that he single-handedly authorized homosexual marriage in the state of Massachusetts. He implemented it. He ordered county clerks to issue homosexual marriage licenses. There's no way to do that in a just way or a moral way or in a truly legal way. You can't do that. It's like, how do you legally say it's okay to lynch black men or to gas Jews. Well, you can't. There's no way to do it in a just and truly legal way. And then there are those positivists who say, well, if you do it following the process, then it is a legitimate law. Well, that's not true. Legal positivism is nothing more than moral relativism in law. And in my perspective, from my observations, virtually all Christian law schools stumble at this, and they don't know how to teach their own students how to oppose legal positivism. They don't know. And so you have everybody from James Dobson to Pat Robertson to everybody else saying, defending judges, our so-called judges, when they uphold killing innocent children, and they say, well, they had to do that. They were following the process. Oh, well, then, so the Germans had to kill the Jews. They were just following the process. Right? And those who captured runaway slaves and returned them in this crime against humanity, returned them to the slaveholders, well, they had to capture the runaway slaves. They were just following the process. They were following orders. And that is not a defense. That is not a defense unless the orders you're following are God's. That's the only time that's an absolute defense. I was following orders. Because if the government tells you, go kill those blacks, go kill those Jews, and you do it, and you say, well, I was only following orders, guess what? Doesn't count. Just doesn't count. So with Mitt Romney, for a time, there were so many conservative Christians who thought, Mitt Romney, he's our answer. And then they realized that he's done way more than Barack Obama to bring about homosexual marriage. He succeeded in doing it on his own authority in Massachusetts. And then he instituted tax-funded elective abortion on demand, late term, for any reason, paid for with tax dollars. That's way more than Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton have accomplished. Way more. And you know what else that is? Big government. It's big government and big spending, because the government gets even further entrenched in healthcare reform. And Mitt Romney says, oh, well, I wasn't making the state of Massachusetts pay for this. I was making the federal government pay for it out of Medicaid, Medicare. Oh, great. Thanks. Do you know that many patients in Medicare get prescription drugs like oxycodone and other narcotics, and they get them from five doctors or more in a single year, showing it's prescription drug abuse? In fact, 170,000 Medicare patients have gotten prescriptions for fentanyl and OxyContin from five doctors or more just in one year. How's that?